Welcome to the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast, where we connect with educators from across the globe who are creating a better future for learning and educating now by implementing bold ideas and fostering a sense of curiosity, creativity, and possibility.
Welcome to the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast. I'm your co-host, Joshua Faden, here alongside my other co-host, Michael Carson.
Hello, everyone.
We are thrilled to be joined today by Nicole Weston, who is the Director of Admissions and Outreach at Templeton Academy, an all-around wonderful person, somebody I've known for many years here, who has a terrific philosophy about how education should be focused on human flourishing. And so I love the term of the idea. And so with that in mind, let's just jump right in. Nicole, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
So this idea of human flourishing, it's a great concept. And what is that really all about?
Where to start? Well, we all know when we're flourishing and when we're not, right? There are people who I guess if I think about the concept and where it started for me was it kind of started back with my own schooling when I was not flourishing. I was probably doing the opposite of flourishing. I was floundering. I was stuck. And I had a teacher in high school, my senior year of high school, Kate Powell, who was a phenomenal teacher in every sense of the word. She taught in a way that gave me access. I didn't realize that I didn't have access before. She taught multi-sensory. I had undiagnosed dyslexia and did not think I could learn effectively. And she opened the door to it. And I had so much fun in that class. And she became kind of my idol in terms of how I wanted to be. First of all, she helped me flourish in a way that I did not realize that I could. And then became a teacher of psychology. I kind of followed in her footsteps. I wanted to continue her legacy and was dedicated to human flourishing. However, I didn't know what to call it at that time at all. I'm teaching psychology. And I'm doing it in really innovative, awesome ways. But what I started to notice as I was teaching psychology over and over again, year after year, was that there was a particular branch that kept standing out, and that was the field of positive psychology, which is the science of flourishing, essentially, is what it is. And psychology had historically focused on dysfunction and bringing people from like a negative 10 up to zero. Human flourishing is about bringing people from like zero up to positive 10. How do we get that piece? How do we get more of the good things in life, you know, the meaningful things? And so year after year as I taught it, I just kept falling more in love with that. And so there are elements to it. There's leaning into strengths, really knowing what your character strengths are and using those to experience more joy in life. When I started studying more on positivity, I started to realize that the more positive you are, and I don't mean this to neglect the negative, because the negative is incredibly important, but our brains function different when positive than when neutral or negative. And when we are positive, we literally see more. Our perception widens, so we see more solutions. Then I started to think about education and how we are so practiced at critical thinking, which is needed. You need to look narrow. You need to look at what the problems are, but without also practice and expanding it, you're in for a problem. We get really good at critical thinking. We need expansive thinking. When you teach people how to flourish and you focus on human flourishing, you get expansive thinking. You get broadening of solutions. So I could go, that was such an open question.
I could
just go on about that. It involves strengths, it involves leaning into your values, it involves living a purposeful life.
we'll go on with it, because I think all those things are important to talk about, the strengths, the leaning into the values, the flourishing. Yeah, I'd love to hear about you.
Sure. So if you look at a lot of traditional focus on education, even with values, right? You hear character value, character is important, you know, these are our values, but nowhere in there are we ever finding out what the student values, right? It's like the, this is what the school values. We value, you know, excellence or responsibility or, you know, respect, but what does the student value? That's where they're going to make their impact on the world. That's what's meaningful to them. So the more you can connect things that are relevant and meaningful to a young person, the more they're going to be able to thrive and flourish in the world, because they're going to lean into that in their career or their, you know, what they do in their future.
Nicole, I'm curious what examples you might be able to share of just even at the most basic level, how you've seen students kind of open up either at Templeton where you're working now or in your career, when they're led to or coached to be more positive or to sort of, like you said, widen the aperture in terms of options of solutions that they're letting in. Right. What are some examples?
Well, so one I can give that stands out is even just paying attention to what a student values or what their character strengths are. I recall a time where we were administering a strengths assessment to our incoming students for the year. And this one young man whose school had been hard for him historically. In a strengths assessment, a lot of the questions are, you know, do you not agree? How strongly do you agree? You know, it's like it's a continuum of agreement to the response. Well, he did not think he did well on this strengths assessment because he didn't agree with so many things, and he almost had he almost couldn't finish it because he felt so demoralized because he felt like he wasn't doing well. And when he got the results, which ultimately showed what he valued and the value that he brings in his character, his whole physical presence shifted.
Wow.
He sat straight up. He felt, you could tell he was proud. He discovered that one of his greatest character strengths was forgiveness. I mean, so then our teachers know, okay, so forgiveness is one of his character strengths. Now, when we're designing lessons, how can I set them up so he can activate forgiveness? Or if humor is a character strength, how can we activate that during the project? So the student can engage more and experience flow ultimately. That optimal sense of psychological well-being where you lose your sense and you lose your sense of self and what you're doing, because what you're doing engages your strengths and your talents and your interest at just the right level that kind of time stands still. That's flow.
So I think that's such a powerful concept. Go on, you can continue with that, because I'd love to just keep hearing more about that concept.
Yeah, I mean, a flow. So it is the name of the author, I can't quite pronounce his name. It's Mikhaili, I think, and I apologize, I don't have that just on the tip of my tongue. But he discovered it, and it's ultimately this. Most people have experienced it all times. I think it should be the goal that we experience it more times than not, where we lose ourselves because we are operating. So you have to look at it a couple of different ways. One, you can activate your character strengths, which are the connected to your values. And should you be interested in learning about them, you can go to the VIA Character Strengths website, Values in Action, and take a free assessment it's fantastic. They'll give you your top five that you lean with. But when you take that, you can activate it so that you can activate it and you're doing things that are historically not engaging, like for example, doing the dishes. If that's not engaging for you, then what if your top strength was curiosity and you activated that during doing the dishes, the experience of doing the dishes would be very different. right? So it can bring more joy and positivity. And so when you activate that, and then you also activate your talents. So I like to think of that as like the StrengthsFinder type of talents. These are the things that you do differently than other people, not necessarily who you are as a person and what you value, but those kind of like little gifts. Are you like highly detail oriented? Do you focus more, are you a planner and you connect to the past and the future together? Are you more in the present? Like there's a whole host of various skills. So when you tap into those, you tap into your character strengths, and you do it at the right level with a task that just challenges you enough that you aren't overwhelmed, but yet you are engaged in learning, time stands still. You can spend time doing that for hours. You lose your sense of self. You engage more in the meaning of what it is that you're doing. And that allows more effective work. Sometimes even during the process, you don't even know that you're enjoying it because you're so unattached to yourself. Right. In fact, sometimes I experience it a lot with gardening and doing landscape. Sometimes you would not think I'm enjoying it when I'm like digging a hole and hitting a root, but I, you know, afterward, this is the best thing ever. So it doesn't always look enjoyable, but it's an afterwards when you kind of like reflect back on, oh, that was great. So I think that the more we can bring that into education, just what a transformative world that would be. When projects are designed with that in mind, where we're not focusing on what people can't do, but we're focusing much more on what they can do, and giving them opportunities to practice what they can do as often as we can, so they can get off the charts great at that.
How does that, Nicole, I love all of that. And I'm thinking about, you know, different school environments and, you know, more traditional public school environments versus private school environments. What kind of challenges have you found in your school now in terms of kind of implementing and iterating off of this approach of the can do and creating lessons and experiences for students that match that? And also what challenges do you see or might come up for teachers who are maybe wanting to try and do this on their own within a classroom that's not maybe at a school level?
Right. So currently at Templeton, it is the essence of what we do. So I don't find it super challenging. We are project-based, so students have voice and choice in there, which is a huge part of this. They have voice and choice over what they're doing. They are involved in the design. They reflect. They choose, you know, what roles they're playing and how they're going to approach it. They are actively engaged in the process, and so they have agency, essentially. Yeah. And we're teaching them to have agency there. So a lot of those pieces are there, and I don't see it as an issue, which is one of the reasons why I, you know, came to Templeton. Yeah. One of them, I'm so excited by Templeton. Now, I've worked in a handful of other schools as well. I have worked in the public system. I was a public school teacher for 12 years in Florida. And I mean, a lot has changed in the public education system. I think the size of the public system makes it very challenging for teachers to do this on a regular basis. To do it at the level that needs to be done. I think of it as, when we work in groups, you know, when we're outside of schools and we're working in groups, very rarely are our groups that we're working with 40 people strong. I had 40 students in a public classroom. So it is very challenging to be able to help each one of those individuals flourish and have the kind of time to do that in a public system, where then the other challenge is that the content is there's not the kind of flexibility with the curriculum either. So it's harder to go after big meaty questions that matter and are relevant over the content that needs to be taught. I don't think it means that it can't be done, but it's gonna take somebody who is incredibly dedicated, spending hours outside of the school day, making sure that it's designed for that.
Yeah. What I just want to ask a little follow-up question about that real quick, Josh. And Nicole, it's sort of, I'm thinking about where, you know, where in probably schools other than your school now, discipline is a big part of what administrators and teachers and students are dealing with. How does positive psychology and helping kids sort of, you know, it sounds like a big part of your mission is helping kids stay in that flow state. How does that impact, you know, discipline and behavior issues and things like that?
That's a good question. Well,
or does it eliminate them, or does it, you know?
Yeah, I don't see them as, we just don't have some of those same issues. When you're approaching, first of all, when you're smaller and you're not involved in behavior management because of the sheer numbers of people, where you have to, how do we get a group of this many from X to Z, or, you know, when classes are let out and all of a sudden there's, you know, 3,000 students in the hallway. It's just right. A non-issue. So I think what changes is that when you have a small setting, the students can see, you see them as complete humans, and they become more of a family.
Yeah.
Sense. And so when that happens, the behavioral issues just, it's, there's a mutual respect. And because there's that mutual respect for who each other are as humans, those issues kind of go away.
We have a friend.
Yes.
Saying hello.
And a... Shall I mute?
I think the small numbers are a big part of it, Nicole, but I worked in schools of like 100 students and in the public school system, and it's, the behavior issues aren't gone. So there's more, I think there's more at play in what you guys are doing. But you're right that the small numbers, I think, you know, it just allows for attention to be placed more specifically on what's being done with the students.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that, you know, one of the things at Templeton that we do is there's agency. We build an agency. Mm-hmm. The students, that is incredibly important to us, that we have individuals who can lead themselves. And so we have conversations with them regularly about, okay, well, yes, you could do X, but if you do X, then what are the likely consequences?
And right.
We use a lot of coaching in how we talk with students. Mm. So what if if students are struggling with something, right? So it could, if handled, it's also how our teachers handle it too. So it could go in a lot of direct directions if a student is struggling and up against obstacle while working on a project. But if the teacher says something to the student along the lines of like, okay, well, what if you used your agency here? How might you see that differently? Or mm-hmm. what resources do you have available? If you stepped back from this or got a higher view, what might you notice? If you were, think of somebody that you really admire, what would they do in this situation? So when you do that, you're calling out the best in the person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes a difference.
Yeah, and one thing, the term I was thinking about when you started just talking there about agency and giving the students agency is a significant part of why you're not seeing behavioral problems, why you're not having discipline issues, is kind of what's happening in those larger school environments or even smaller schools where the adults are not engaged, is that, you know, the discipline issues, the behavior issues come out of learned helplessness, which is kind of the other side of that, you know, flow state, is that learning, just like not even realizing how many things, you know, this, there are just to tread water in that learned helplessness state.
Mm-hmm. Just getting by and not, why try if it's not going to
right
work. So I think with our students, we just call them forward, you know, in different ways. Mm-hmm. We want them to flourish. And so because we want them to flourish in who in a handful of ways. We want them to flourish in terms of like who they become, which matters to right. us. We want them to flourish. And when they decide who they want to become, you know, who they are and who they want to continue to become, then we help them answer the questions of like, okay, well, what do you need to know in order to go there? And then once they get that, well, what do you need to be able to do? What skills do you need? That we're tending, in addition to curriculum, we're tending to them as people and developing right. them so that when they do graduate, they know how to be, they know how to do, and they know how to, they know information, they know what to do, and then they know who they want to be.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or at the very, even if they don't yet know who they want to be, because that's a lifelong process, right? That's
right,
a very,
right.
They have a framework for how to get there, which is, what do I care about? What do I do well? What am I interested in? What, you know, what wakes me up in the morning? You know, what are some of those things? And then I can, when I go out into the world, you know, I can look at this job that I'm being offered and say, will this allow me to, does it align with my values? Right, will I be able to actually right. lean into my strengths? Will I spend most of my time in my strengths area? Even if it, or not, you know, does it matter that it pays well and I'm gonna be spending most of my time in my areas of weakness? Like, those are questions that they can ask, which will impact whether or not they flourish.
Yeah, well, and especially such an important assessment on that. I feel like the East Coast is that whole, you know, when you meet people at a cocktail party, the first thing you ask is, what do you do? And it's almost like you're saying to the kids, no, what are your values? Mm-hmm. And what you do is sort of secondary to, is it lining up with that? Which a lot of people are never taught. You know, a lot of people identify with a role for themselves that they've never even thought whether or not it fits them. All they know is that they're where they are. So that I love that idea of, you know, a coach of mine, John, will say, so what are you becoming?
Yes,
you know, it's a, like you said, it's a lifelong process. It's, you never become something, you're always becoming something.
Yeah,
I love that. I think that's so crucial. I'm glad that you talked about the fact that the framework, Nicole, because I was going to say otherwise, I think adults can we all come back to Templeton and learn that as well, because I think that's important. Like you said, it's, and I think what you're saying there, Michael, is about the process. And so I'm curious, Nicole, as you think about your experience and what goes into creating that environment and that culture in the school for the students to be able to have that experience, what types of trainings or supports or just general experiences do you feel are essential for teachers to be able to have to lead the students in that way that allows them to really find their flow?
So trainings for teachers to have? That's a good question. Most of mine has been self-taught. So I don't know that I've gone to, read. In terms of like connecting it with the positive psychology piece, and you know, I think I had years, I was fortunate with that the years that I was teaching, I was teaching the subject, and so it was easy to just apply it, you know, all the time. And so I know that our teachers are going through, we're introducing a new core advisory program this year, which is built around purpose and finding your purpose. And so we're gonna have a curriculum with that, and we're gonna have training with that through, we're looking at a couple of different places, Wayfinder being one of them. And so our freshman year, we're looking at having our students focus on identity, which is, what better time? I mean, adolescents, this is exactly the crisis that they're facing. I know as a parent too.
Right.
And so there you have freshman year focusing on identity with their advisor, core advisor. Sophomore year, they're focusing on agency. Their junior year, they're focusing on compassion. And with the compassion piece, it's compassion for self as well as others. And then the senior year, the focus is on purpose during the advisory program, and they'll have a purpose capstone that they do. And that, again, it's a framework for them to take with them through life. If they know their purpose, great. But we know most people are, you know, are in different places along that path.
Yeah. What are, just thinking about the question you asked, Josh, and maybe more, a different way to ask it, Nicole, is, you know, when you're looking to hire a teacher, or you have a teacher that you're working with, what are some of the qualities that that educators have, teachers have, that are working well within this sort of framework, within this mindset of positive psychology and possibility? You know, what are the elements? What are the personality traits? What are the things that are special about those teachers that sort of allow them to be successful?
Yeah.
That others might want to nourish too in their own teaching.
Well, one is they usually come across as already experiencing flow. They are doing what they care about, what is meaningful, and what they're able to lead with their strengths in.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes across when you talk with them. They get, you know, they get jazzed up about instructional design, you know, they get really excited about meaningful questions and walking students through it. Like, that is where they come alive. That's where you see the body changes happening. That's where it gets them up in the morning. And so we want teachers who that is what gets them up. That is what puts them in flow. That is what helps them flourish. Then their job is to model that. What part one is they model it, right? And then two is they seek it for their students. So what you typically see, what I see with teachers who I think excel in this, is they care as much about what the student cares about as they do about the content that they're teaching.
Yeah, and that's so important.
Because they can have there are teachers out there who have incredible passions for their subject, but maybe they fall short in the area of not caring as much about what the students care about.
Right.
Unless it helps them connect it to the subject.
Exactly.
It's a matter of, like, who is this amazing human you have before you that has gifts and has talents and has things that are important to them that we can help nourish so that they can be an agent in their own life and onward and upward there.
I mean, it sounds like a lot of what your teachers aren't doing is sort of a lot of the behaviorism based kind of psychology approaches to teaching and learning, like focusing on, okay, this is the subject and it's the most important thing. And then I'm gonna just, you know, you're Pavlov's dog, and I know it's gonna make you drool. So I'm just gonna tie that in, you know. And that's, you know, that's a lot of what education is still, is like this sort of, you know, very unintentional, I think, manipulation of not taking into account gifts, talents, and things that are important, or to use that as bribes. So it's a very, it's a different paradigm, you know, that you are working in with your school and kind of in your frame of mind that I think is so refreshing. Just to hear teachers that care about that sort of thing.
And then we direct it with the project-based learning is they're focusing on relevant, meaningful questions. I think of students, particularly students who struggle with like ADHD, who just sitting in front of a lecture and trying to pay attention to something that does not feel relevant or meaningful to them is torture. And so, it looks very different. They're hands-on, they're engaged, they're creating. So they end up leaving with both critical and creative thinking skills. Mm. They're able to design projects from beginning to end, you know, where they're learning how to, okay, if I want, this is my, I can create a vision for what I want and I can make it happen without having to be directed the whole time to make that happen. And so I think of like where we are in this place in time and history. When more said important, where we can have a vision that we can learn the skills to, we needed to make that happen. And then add in that we use the city as a classroom. Mm-hmm. Where our students are learning from people all over the city. And during COVID, the city's coming to us. We're bringing guest speakers in all the time. From all over the city, and now actually all over the globe, because we can virtually. Yeah. And so yeah. when you do that, then you add in, you know, you the students leave high school knowing the resources in the city that they went to school, all over the city, all types of resources, nonprofits, government agencies. They learn what is around them, and so they're set up at a different level completely, because now they have the place-based education and connections to the resources, right. How they operate when they leave, and they have the thinking skills, and we're doing it in terms of things that they care about that are meaningful and relevant. So yeah. I'm excited by it.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. Do you have a question
there? Well, I love what you were talking about in terms of the meaningful and relevant questions. That's the idea that I heard that I think is so powerful, because we often say in a classroom, if you think about the questions that are being asked, it's often turn to the end of the chapter and answer these four questions that I haven't even read myself and don't know if they're relevant to what we're discussing in class. But what you're saying is when you make the questions meaningful and relevant, and not when you make them, but when the students have a say in those questions, the impact, I would imagine, is powerful. And so I'm curious, what are you noticing when you allow the students to create those powerful and relevant questions in their lives that they can then go explore?
Well, I mean, we notice that buy-in is not an issue. They're there, you know, those are the things that they're caring about. And so I want to also back up, I'm going to answer that, but you know, as students coming in, that's a hard thing to do, right? To have like, what are the driving questions that we're going to deal with in this chapter? So we provide, you know, frameworks and scaffolding, but our ultimate goal is when they're seniors that they're able to do this completely on their own. And the teachers are taking into consideration what the students care about. So, and then there's, you know, valuable discussion that happens. So like one driving question could be, right? You know, how do we as photojournalists tell the untold stories of people in our community, right? That feels very different than we're gonna learn about journalism. And so it's like, okay, how do we? And so then part of the process that they're engaged in is okay, well, first of all, what is photojournalism and how can we learn about that? Who do we need to know, or what do we need to be able to do to be able to be photojournalist? And so there's that piece. So then they reach out and connect with people to learn that piece. Then they have to, well, who are the people in the community whose stories aren't being told? So then they discuss that. They learn, they reach out to people. And so they're moving something forward, and then at the end they have something valuable and meaningful. And so that process is just engaging. and it's not like along the way there's obstacles. And so they're learning how to deal with those obstacles. You know, they're reaching out to this person and they're not getting back to them. Lesson learned. What are some other ways around that? So it is just powerful. They dive into it. They feel such a sense of pride over their work. And then when you tie that with like an authentic audience to it too, where it doesn't feel, I think the difference is it feels real. It feels like they're learning for something important, as opposed to, I have to learn these skills and my teacher has to check the box that I learned these skills. And so then it's meaningful.
Yeah, I think that kind of experience, like you said, it's almost, for your students, it's a new way to think that almost at first feels like, is this a trick? Is this a trap? Am I actually able to explore this? And that's something, I mean, Michael and I are always talking about what we can do to reimagine and rethink education. And I think when we talk about that, it's this idea of that shouldn't feel like a trick and a trap. That should feel like school and education and what it is, because like you said, you have the buy-in, you have the meaning, you have that experience and excitement, and really it's about the end goal, and the experience is the end goal for the students, that they have that sense of pride, that buy-in, and that knowledge that they're gaining. So Michael, I think you had a question here, but I just wanted to point that out because I think that's powerful, Nicole, in that aspect there.
Go ahead, Nicole, and then I'll ask a question.
Yeah, I was just thinking that there are so many, you know, I hear a lot from, the business world and the college world that so many young people going into college or getting jobs need such handholding because they're not sure how to move in a direction without direction. And I think that's because that is what school has done to them. And as opposed to them learning to listen to themselves, trust themselves, make the mistakes, and not get caught up in whether these mistakes are, you know, failure or not failure, like whether or not it's going to impact their future. You know, if they fail here, fail at this, because I mean, the reality is, I mean, think about what you're doing right now. This is your third interview for a podcast that you're launching. This is lifelong learning. This is what it is.
Thanks, Teach.
Find something and then see what happens and learn from your mistakes and keep going. You know, that's what it is. And that's what young people need to be prepared to do. And that is the opposite, in my opinion, of much of what they have been taught.
I love it. And I'm kind of hungry for, if you could give us some, you know, give us some stories or some examples of, you know, I'm curious about some of the projects that are occurring, but really even more so curious about students, like you mentioned earlier, the student who felt as though he was failing the personality strengths assessment. And, you know, it was just, he just wasn't used to that kind of experience. But what are some other stories to kind of paint a picture for some of the transformations that you see happening in terms of students' work and projects and just their overall, you know, effectiveness and sense of flow in the classroom as they sort of go through this, you know, almost entering this new paradigm for learning in school?
Mm-hmm. So recently one of our environmental classes, even during COVID, so this was kind of exciting to see, they did a project where this is for there's two projects. One was environmental science and one was physics. So our environmental science class put together a film. They decided to do kind of like an awareness campaign about environmental issues. And so they put together a very short film it was like a documentary. And so they, in terms of that, they were incredibly engaged. They stepped outside of their comfort zone a lot. They went to interview folks about it. They had to learn filming. They had to learn like what filming is also. And so we had guest speakers come in to talk to them about filming. Our physics class did a wonderful presentation, and this was via Zoom because that's after the COVID struck. the teacher quickly adapted it to doing a did a bungee cord. Okay, it's a long name, so it was a bungee jumping app expo. Okay. So the idea was that they were at an expo, right, with people who run different bungee cord parks. I don't have the right name for it right now. and so they had to sell us, they had to pitch us on so I became the, I was one of the owners of a bungee cord jumping thing, and they had to pitch us on why their app was better than the other apps there, so that we would buy their app, you know. And so I've seen that. I've seen teachers, I've seen calculus students who love calculus create apps that teach other people how to do calculus. I have seen students who, when they lean into and they care about community, like, so one student that stands out in my mind in the past, where he really cared about community and giving back, and that was one of the things that drove him. I've seen a project, it was a psychology project that was turned for him, where it was on human development was the topic, and he was able to, he turned it into a blog where he was giving advice on two teenage mothers about developmental issues.
Wow.
So turned to a meaningful thing. And he, this was somebody who struggled to get work done sometimes, but he stayed up for night upon night upon night getting that done because he was so engaged in that platform. So that is tapping into what people care about and then setting them off to learn the content. Yeah. Well, they still learn the content.
Yeah. I love it. And what, you know, what educator, what parent wouldn't want their child in that flow state of, hey, you need to get to bed. Stop doing your schoolwork.
Exactly.
You know, right. You've been doing it all day since you got home.
Oh, really? I didn't even realize I missed dinner.
But I think that's even that, I wonder, I'm curious if this comes up with parents, but I wonder if for maybe not the Templeton community, but in other schools, when this sort of thing starts to happen, you know, those who have gone through school that is very much focused on critical thinking and categorization and testing and all of that, that it doesn't, is there something wrong that they're not struggling? Is there, what is this, what's the deal with this? Like, no, they should be, you know, they should be having to do things they don't want to do. That's what I did when I went through school. I don't know, I'm curious if you ever get that attitude or concern.
I mean, yeah, I mean, at times for sure. But my response is that you're not doing good work usually when it's that much of a struggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's a struggle.
Right.
So, and don't get me wrong. Like, there are things we need to learn that are hard. And there are things that, the trick is knowing how to engage in those things in a way that can still get you into more of a flow experience so that it can be more meaningful so that you can think more expansively. Because when you can think more expansively, you're not going to shut down when you come across things that are hard.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that concern, too, is coming from, I'm just thinking about the people who might be hearing this or just need that guidance. You know, when you connect something, whether it would be, you know, a subject you struggled with to something you really care about, you know, from a cognitive perspective, you're using more of your resources because those parts of the brain are firing together instead of it being isolated. So I think there's also a, you know, you have to experience that to understand what's happening. That actually, oh yeah, the same amount of effort's there. It's just not coming out as a struggle. It's coming out as passion.
Yeah, passion or a challenge is gonna make you stronger. Like, it's just kind of how you think about it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And if people are, the other, if you think about the classical conditioning or the operant conditioning you were talking about before, like with Pavlov's dogs, if every time somebody is learning something, it is a struggle, then they're learning that learning is hard and it's going to be, they're going to have an aversive relationship to it.
Yeah, state dependence.
Yeah. And so when in reality, if it was more joyful, then you're getting the opposite effect and the opposite connection, right? The opposite conditioning. And not to mention the benefits of a brain that is positive is operating more effectively than a brain at negative. You see more solutions. There's interesting research even about what's happening to our, at the cellular level when we're operating at positive.
Yep.
Which is why I'm so excited by your podcast.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. I think that the power there, Nicole, too, is exactly what you said, where it's what we want to create is what we will create. And so when we view learning as a joy and not a chore or something that's being done to us, it's powerful. I think even just the juxtaposition of seeing students currently who are in classroom settings that I've worked with currently, where the teachers have tried to just take what they were doing in the classroom before and move it online without having any opportunities to create that passion, that excitement, that meaning, versus the students that you're talking about at Templeton who are in the midst of a pandemic and having these incredible experiences. It's to me night and day as to what opportunity can be. So as you think about that, as we are always trying to think about where could education go and what needs to happen, I'm curious, what are your visions, ideas, goals for education as we do move forward, both now as we're living through a pandemic and in the future as we reimagine, rethink schooling in general?
Well, my vision is that it is a lot of different things, because I think there are a lot of different things that people need and will flourish in. And we are not a one-size-fits-all. And so I think the further we can move away from the mass education piece to smaller, more micro type of environments that focus on different things that are important to different families, I do think that there probably needs to be some similar skill content development that is, you know, across the board, you know, kind of not fully standard, but pretty standard. You know, people need to learn to read and write. People need to learn math. I'm not saying move away from some of those pieces, but I think that having schools focus much more, honestly, much more on the individual. And that's going to look different in different schools. But I think that is where we're teaching individuals. We're not teaching groups, we're teaching individuals. Learning is a personal thing. And so I think the more that schools focus on that, on who is in front of them, there's the famous quote, right? You can't teach me until you know me. But how can we effectively teach somebody if we do not know them? We're throwing stuff at them and hoping that they grab it. And, you know, I had years of doing that. And for some, it latched on. And for some, I couldn't get there. And that saddens me, because that was time we spent together. That seems like it was, you know, almost wasted in many respects. It could have been so much more. But I think the vision for me, like what I would like to see, is a lot of small schools that have different kind of aims and focuses, where we, where students are seen as the greatest resource ever, that they are, and that we take care and we see the awesome responsibility of what it is to shape young minds and to ultimately shape the future. And that is an incredible responsibility, and it is not to be taken lightly.
I love it. This has been a fantastic conversation, Nicole. The time flies by hearing your brilliant ideas and what's happening at your school.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's fun to talk about what I get excited about.
I'm curious, you know, because we've asked a lot of questions and directed some of the conversation, and just, you know, with the last few minutes here, is there anything that you haven't shared that you would like to share? Any ideas or topics that you'd like to squeeze in here that you're passionate about?
It's one of my favorite questions, and I didn't think that through.
You've given us a lot already.
I guess maybe I think it would just lead with kind of going back to that vision, that in addition to teaching the individual, it is critically important that teachers listen.
Yeah.
That schools listen. And that is part of what we do with young people in education, is we listen. They they have so much to offer, and they are already geniuses in so many ways. And they have much to teach us, much more to teach us if we listen, because they haven't been as shaped and molded. Yeah. So they, you know, I think that their gifts need to be released, and that's what I see in the world with education, is that it needs to be about releasing the gifts in these individuals.
I love it. And I love how
I think you're cutting out there, Michael, so I can jump in here, because I think I echo that sentiment of loving what you're saying here, Nicole, and loving this idea, loving the concept, loving what you're saying in terms of how the goals of education as we rethink them need to simply be about the students and about unleashing their gifts, their goals. And, you know, it's interesting, as we asked you earlier around what do teachers need to do and what trainings and experiences, I think the last thing that you just said there really sums it up perfectly. If we can teach teachers to listen, more so than needing to feel like we are the experts or that we have the answers, I think that we will come a very long way with just simply being able to do that as a society. So I think that's a great way to kind of wrap up and leave with that final thought there, and to allow ourselves to just pause and to listen.
Love it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nicole.
Ah, thank you.
I feel very positive now.
Yeah, me too.
Looking forward. All right.
Thank you to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this episode and that Nicole gave you some food for thought about the impact of positive psychology on students, the concepts of human flourishing, as well as the importance of creating belonging and agency for students, and much more. You can reach Nicole at nicole.weston, W-E-S-T-O-N, at templetonacademy.org. For more information on the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast, visit our website, www.amplifyingoptimism.com. Join us next week, where we explore the connections between coaching and education and think about how to bring our creative licenses to a post-pandemic educational world with our guest, Jen Lara of Anne Arundel County Community College. Keep on amplifying optimism in education and beyond.